Okay. Today is January 16th, 2009. We're at the Amelia Island Museum of History, Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing John David Allen, born in March 29, 1924, in Lake City, Tennessee. My name is Edgar Johnson, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Robert Hamer, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Mr. Allen, what was your period of service?
You mean how long I was in the service?
Yeah, what years were you in the service?
Let's see. 1943. And I got out in 1945.
Okay. And you served during World War II?
Yes.
Okay. And where did you serve? What?
Germany.
Okay. And Belgium and France as well?
Belgium and France and Luxembourg and all through there.
Okay. And what was your rank?
Well, private first class.
Okay. Now, when did you join the military?
I didn't join. I was drafted.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about the circumstances when you first were drafted?
Well, I was working at Glenn L. Martin Aircraft Company, building bombers and PBM-3s and British 187 fighter plane. And I got 1 6-month deferment, and I was 18 years old, and I was a group leader over a bunch of women, 7 women and 3 men. And both of my brother-in-laws were in the service, and they gave me 1 6-month deferment, and they asked me to... They could give me another one, and I told them no, that I wanted to go on in the service and serve because I wasn't going to sit around, and my brother-in-law was in there and everything. Mm-hmm. So in about, I'd say, 2.5 weeks after I turned it down, they called me in.
Okay, so they didn't waste any time.
And didn't waste no time. Okay. And I went in, and I joined the paratroopers, mm-hmm. and I'm with the 101 Infantry Division, mm-hmm. paratroopers. Mm-hmm. And they're the division that got shot up pretty bad in Italy. And I made 4 jumps, and on my 4th jump, I busted 2 ligaments in my right side. And they took me out of the paratroopers because they wouldn't, if you get hurt, well, they don't want you no more. So they put me in the infantry, the 106th Division, and I went to Lebanon, Tennessee, and took my maneuvers, and then we went overseas. And the best I remember, we come in after D-Day. I think I come in on Omaha Beach.
Okay.
And we went up through France and winded up in Northern France and the Rhineland and the Ardennes Forest all through there. And that's when I got captured in the Belgian Bulge, the Battle of the Bulge. Mm-hmm. And you want me to go ahead and tell you?
Yeah, just and keep going.
At this particular period, the Germans fortified that ridge, and we were fighting. Our division was fighting against 2 infantry and 1 armored division in the Belgian Bulge. And they throwed everything that they could think of. They completely surrounded us, and we couldn't get out. We tried to pincer through the line, and we couldn't do nothing. So General Jones, he decided to be the best thing, instead of seeing all of us slaughtered, just to give up. And they killed and wounded, I think what they told me, 3,500 and they captured the rest of us, which was 4,500. They completely demolished my division. And then the journey started trying to get us to a camp. And we walked 162 miles through Germany. And where we were captured in the Battle of the Bulge, we swung north, and armies would be coming in, like the British 8th Army would be coming in, and then it'd keep going right on north, and maybe the French would be coming in. A lot of those countries were our allies, like Russia and Hindus from India. Mm-hmm. But in other words, they kept circling, and we finally winded up south, 150 miles from the Swiss border. Stalag 9B Bad Orb was the camp, and Bad Orb was a little town about the size of the island here. And we were 3.5 miles up on the mountain where Stalag 9B Bad Orb was. And that's where we spent our days right there. And I got captured the 19th of December. And it's just about like this weather here, maybe a little colder. And snow was about a foot deep. And so that's where we wind up. You want me to go ahead now? And
keep going.
What we did in the camp and all that.
Yeah, you can describe what your experience was like in the camp. Or maybe tell us a little bit, what was it like to march that 162 miles?
Well, what they did, the Americans would strafe us during the day if we walked in of a day, because they could see German soldiers and they thought that was a German troops moving. And so the Germans switched that, and we walked of a night and put us in some kind of a building or something during the day. And we'd walk all day long, and they just give us a little bit of food along water. And some of the men tried to escape, break ranks, and pull out and go into a woods or something, and the Germans would shoot them down. They'd tell them to halt, but they wouldn't, you know, they're trying to get away, and they'd shoot them down. And like I say, we winded up, we circled that thing there, and a lot of places I don't even remember where we, because we walked of a night, you know, and mm-hmm. But we walked 162 miles and we winded up south, and I was in a stockade with barbed wire around it, and they had guards in a tower, and a lot of the prisoner of war over there winded up on farms. They raised potatoes and stuff. I wished I'd have got that.
Mm-hmm.
And they like starved us to death. What they would do, they'd peel potatoes and give the German soldiers the potatoes and make soup out of the peelings.
Okay.
And put barley and something else in there. It tasted awful, but you get used to it. And they'd give you one slice of what we call a German black bread. It's made out of wheat, barley, rye. And the Germans would make thousands of loaves of this and stack it in a barn and put hay around it, and they could go back a month and get it and it'd be all right. They must put some kind of chemicals in there keeping it spoiling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when we was in there, we used to go out in the yard when the sun be shining. We could see planes going over to Berlin to bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And I've stood out there and I've counted, I'd count up to 70 or 80. I know there'd be over 100 planes, and you'd see the white streak way up there. And they had about 20 escort fighters, P-38s, I believe what they call them. And they'd dive down on our camp, and they could see German guards out there, and the Germans walking around, and they got to strafing us. And they tore our barracks all to pieces. They went right down the middle, and boy, big hunks of wood just tore out of there. So we learned them. We got over against the wall. In other words, when you could hear them diving, everybody get along the walls, let them have the middle of it.
Yeah.
Because if a man was in standing out there, you'd get shot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
you mentioned.
So what we did, we asked the Germans, would they give us some lime? So we went out there and made a great big PW in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So they quit that, you know. They'd drive down and see that PW and go right back up with their formation.
Mm-hmm.
You ought to see them P-38s. We've seen them Luftwaffe try to shoot our bombers down. Oh, my Lord, they ain't, that little old plane could really tear them up, buddy. I've seen them go down through there like this right over our camp. Mm-hmm. First thing you know, a Luftwaffe be down there smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot them out of them.
Yeah. How long did it take you to march to the camp?
Somebody else asked. I think it was is right close to a month, somewhere in that range. I don't remember as many days as it was. Seemed mm-hmm. like it took a long time. Some days we'd walk more. It's according to the weather and all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we hoofed it pretty good while we had a chance, you know, because you never know when you're going to run into somebody fighting or something, and they'd have to get into the ditch and all that stuff. And,
mm-hmm. Now, what was the weather like during the march?
About like this.
Cold.
It's cold up there. You know, in Switzerland and northern Germany and all like that.
Was it rainy?
Bad. Sometimes sleet and rain, you know. And but in that prison camp, the snow stayed on the ground all the time.
Mm-hmm.
General Patton's 44th Recon troops liberated us. We mm-hmm. could hear their artillery and their guns coming up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And all me and my buddies, we would predict. I say, well, they'll be here about 4 o'clock in the morning. They did come of a morning. I missed it by 2 hours. Got in there about 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to be liberated?
Oh Lord, that's the wonderfulest thing in the world. What happened when they knew that we were going to be liberated? The Americans were coming. The Germans took all the troops out and left 4 guards there. And these guards would turn them over to, you know, to the, and I was hunting the guard that knocked my teeth out. I got hit in the mouth with a stick in that camp, and I had me a two before. His mama wouldn't have known him when I got out of it.
What was the daily life like in the camp?
Well, we would sit around these guys and have paper like y'all got and figure out little old things that our mother could fix us, like chocolate pie and hamburger meat and all
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make a pie out of it, and you ought to see some some of the stuff that they worked up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just nothing, you know, we'd go out, and the Germans would come in and holler, "Raus," that means get out in German.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have to go out on a parade field, and they'd tell us somebody broke in the kitchen and stole some potatoes and all that stuff, which didn't mean nothing. I mean, you know, what's mm-hmm. 3 or 4 potatoes with 4,500? And in this camp, I was going to tell you this, there were 200 Russians in there. There were British soldiers, Hindus from India, French, just about every nationality, but they weren't as many as there was of us. Mm-hmm. They was 4,500 of us. And another sad thing about being in there, the Germans come around one day, and I don't know how they figured it out. They took all the Jewish boys out of the camp, and they'd come in there. If your name, last name was Davis, and you were connected with Jews, like your mother was a Jew and your daddy was a Jew, they knew that, and where they knew that, I don't know. I really don't know. And they hauled them out in trucks. I think it was 117, the best I can remember, because there was a colonel interviewed me in Miami, Florida, when I got to come back, and they asked me where they went. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that they probably killed them. You know, they
mm-hmm.
they burnt 6 million Jewish boys, you know, and families yeah. and things. But they took them out, and I think they interviewed a whole lot of us, you know, and see if they could get some information. But we could see the trucks and see them loading them on the truck, and that's all we could, you know. But I remember them coming out, getting out of our barracks. I think they got 11 out of our barracks. And there's 345 men in that. Well, it wasn't a barracks. It's just a big old building. It looked like a barn, you know, converted. And they had like a straw bed here, one here, and one up here. They had three built, so, and just put straw in there. That's what we laid on.
So it was a three-tier bunk.
Yeah. But and they put two men to the, because it's so cold, you couldn't stand it by yourself. See, the Germans took our overcoat, took our watches and our money and everything. When they come along and feel your arm, take it right off.
Were you in your uniform? Did they leave you your uniform? Were you able to stay
there? I was in my uniform, but they took my overcoat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And boy, I tell you what, it phew, bad. I mean, that's you get cold.
Did they give you blankets?
No.
Okay, so
see, that's why they put two men in there. You hover my back tonight, and I'll get yours tomorrow night. Your buddy, you know.
All right, so you
see, put that straw around us. It helped a little bit, you know. But when you're 19 years old, you can stand a whole lot. You know, we couldn't stand it now. There's no way.
Okay, so you really, your only clothes were your uniform.
That's right. Of course, we had long handle underwear.
Now,
and the whole time in there, I never did get to take a bath because you can't bathe in cold water. There's no way. Not in that water down, that weather down to zero temperature.
So after a while, you got used to the smell?
Yeah. And if you died, there's a bunch of us died. I mean, a bunch of my buddies died in there. They just couldn't eat that food, especially the Chinese boys. They'd give their food away. I couldn't stomach it either, but you got to get used to it if you're going to figure on living.
Sure.
And what they did in our barracks, they steps going down in the basement. It was concrete just like this, a big opening. And we'd start over here in the corner and put bodies all down through there.
So they would stack the bodies in a row down in the basement?
Yeah, like this.
Okay.
Then come back and get another row, and we'd pour lime over them. See, you couldn't just leave them down there; they'd rotten.
Right. So the bodies were taken down to the basement of the barracks.
Yeah, where we stayed.
Where you stayed.
Yeah.
And then you would cover. There would be a row of bodies, and you would cover it with lime.
Yeah. Whenever they wanted to die, we'd put him down there and cross his arms, and the Germans would take one of his dog tags, and it'd go back to the adjutant general in Washington, and they'd bury the other one with you.
Yeah. And then they would when. One row was filled up, they would put another row on top and then cover them with lime.
Yeah, some cases, yeah, but there it was such a big place. See, every barracks had their own thing where they just make another row, but if it got full, they could do it that way.
So in the... They kept all of the prisoners from the division in the one camp?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stalag 9B Bad Orb.
And so you, in the camp, you had a lot of your friends were with you.
Yeah.
Then.
Buddies that I fought with, yeah.
Yeah. What was that like to have your friends around?
Oh, yeah. You could pass the time of day, you know, you could talk and walk inside the barracks and sometimes get outside and walk. If the sun's out, walk a little bit and get back in there because it's cold. But some of them could eat a little bit of their food, and then they'd give you the rest of it, you know, and stuff like that. And me being from Tennessee, that's where my original home, I knew what water creases was. And I think it was in February, we had a stream that went right through our camp, and that water you could actually drink. It was pure, you know, coming out of the mountain. And water creases is out there in that. And I took my steel helmet and I'd wash it out real good and I'd pick water creases and put that clear water in there. And I'd go up there and sit on my bunk and I'd eat them water creases. And them boys, they just gang around me and they'd say, what are you eating, John? I said, these are water creases. Are you eating them raw? I said, yeah, they're good for you. You can eat, that's just like a salad. And I'm telling you, all of them got to going down there and all down that stream in our... They shut me plumb out. They got, Mm-hmm. I got them for about a week, and that was it.
Okay.
You know, you start something, you got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, while you were in the camp, did you have much contact with the Red Cross?
Well, they kept telling us, the Germans, that the Red Cross was going to send us Red Cross packages and all that stuff, and we never did get anything. I think, my personal opinion, because we've seen signs of it, when we come out of the camp, we could see empty boxes, Red Cross boxes along the road,
mm-hmm.
and we're thinking that the German guards got that. That's a food for them, see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What you're getting, what you're supposed to get, is two different things, you know.
Right. What was the treatment by the guards like?
Well, these guards that we had were pretty rough, mean, or whatever you want to call it. They come from, they fought in Russian, Persian up through there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them's arms shot off. They can't go in combat anymore, so they made guards out of them. Maybe an eye shot out or an ear gone, and they're casualties, you know. And they hated Americans. They hated us. And that's when I got these teeth knocked out. I was walking in the back. It was a sunny day as far back as I can remember. And you could walk a little bit out there, you know. And I thought, well, if I keep moving, I'll make it a little bit longer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You was always thinking about tomorrow. You might be dead tomorrow. And somebody come up on my left side, and I thought one of my buddies wanted to walk with me, you know. And I turned around and smiled, and it was this brutal guard. He loved to beat on you, in the chow line.
Mm-hmm.
If you was out of the line just about that much, he'd hit you over the head or anything. I've seen blood running out of people's ear and everything. And he had that stick in his right hand, and he come around this way quick. And I think he's aimed at my throat, and I couldn't get out of the way, and he hit me in the teeth. And them boys said it. He knocked me unconscious, and I laid out there, I think about 6 or 7 minutes. And one guy told me, said JD, said he stood over you. I think he was going to try to kick you in the head. And he seen that blood coming out of my mouth, I guess, and he just went on. But anyhow, they come out there and carried me in there. And boy, I'm telling you the truth. If you've ever been hit in, I used to box in the service, and I had about 17 fights, you know, battalion would fight battalion, mm-hmm. all like that. I ain't never been hit in the head that hard. All day long, my pressure like this, I could feel my head doing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to keep my tongue over that, keep it warm.
Mm-hmm.
You get that cold air in there, boy, it'll just knock the top of your head off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a VA medical said, I don't see how in the world, Mr. Allen, it didn't injure your brain, or it's just one of them things, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a shot in the mouth, boy.
Okay.
And the reason I woke up, those guys, they rolled me over on my side. Those teeth and clotted blood was down here in my throat, and I couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to do something, and a clot of that come out so that I could breathe in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, so they're rolling you over really saved your life.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those guys stood right over me and worked with me and done my hands and shook my head and all that, you know, and took a cloth But I was going to tell you about these four guards. I went all over that camp hunting for it when we got liberated. And I seen the four. Their mama didn't know them either. They were, them guys beat them poor guys. I mean, you take all them prisoners in there working on four guys. Everybody got a whack at them. And I think one or two of them, just to tell you the truth, I believe one or two of them died. But I was hunting that guy that done me, see. I wouldn't care anything about them guys. They didn't bother me. But they knew he was so rough, they took him out of there. They knew that he'd never get to the gate because somebody'd kill him.
Because
everybody had it in for him.
Okay.
But you couldn't do nothing. A lot of people don't understand when you're in a concentration camp, you do what they say. If you reject anything, you're asking for it. Mm-hmm. If they say kneel down on your knees, get down on your knees. Mm-hmm. Don't say there, well, it's muddy here. That ain't gonna get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a prison camp for you, see.
Right.
It ain't like a jail or a penitentiary. You can kind of argue with them people.
Mm-hmm.
You don't argue with the enemy. They just soon shoot you. They got pistols. They'll mm-hmm. pull them pistol down and shoot you right between the eyes. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You're just another dead soldier to them.
Right. Now, you mentioned the food was this potato peel soup and black bread. So you must have lost a lot of weight while you were in camp.
Weighed 111 pounds when I got liberated. See, there's nothing there. There's no vitamins or nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
Got plenty of water, good clean water, but
mm-hmm.
can't live on water, you know.
Okay.
For a while you can, but.
Yeah. So what happened to you after the camp was liberated?
They shipped us back to Camp Lucky Strike, France. That's a hospital mm-hmm. staging area.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, their hospitals over in Europe were named after cigarettes. I don't know why. Lucky Strike, Philip Morris, that's the way they named them. They, mm-hmm. they wouldn't say Hospital St. Mary's or,
mm-hmm.
of course, it was tense, you know. And when I got in there, I had a beard and eat up with body lice and, oh, my God, filthy. I couldn't even stand my own self because I went for months and not even bathed. And an orderly, a black orderly, I never will forget it. He had octagon soap. You know what octagon soap is.
Mm-hmm.
he said, Mr. Allen, I'm going to wash you down. He said, I don't guess you've ever been washed and you a man. I said, no. I said, help yourself. He took octagon soap and put me under a shower and started washing me. And they put us in clean sheets, and God, I'm telling you, I slept like a baby. See, I'd stay awake half the night scratching these body lice.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to believe, I had underwear. They had eggs. These bugs would lay eggs in the heat of my body in the seams of my clothes, mm-hmm. and they'd hatch there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd sleep maybe 2 minutes and do this and see they washed us and put some kind of a alcohol or something on us and put us in between clean sheets and let us sleep for a while. God, I think I slept for 14 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the colonel over the camp put out an order that let these prisoners of war go to the kitchen any time they want to. If it's 1 o'clock in the morning, if you want a steak, you got it. If you want ice cream, you got it. And my buddies would wake me up about 2 o'clock in the morning. We'd eat about 10
mm-hmm.
and four. Let's go to the kitchen and get us something.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be talking, walking down. Let's see now, what are we going to eat this morning? I believe I'll have pork chops. One guy said, no, I want some cake and ice cream.
Yep.
We'd tell them cooks down there, and they'd fix the part.
Mm-hmm.
We had to run to the camp. If you want a beer, you get a beer.
Yeah. So you had been about six or seven months without a bath when you got to Camp Lucky Strike.
It's over 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah, and you had lost.
It was bad. A lot of people don't understand this. This is good to know. Especially people that don't know anything about Europe and the fighting and the war and everything. When you fight overseas, like this Camp Lucky Strike, you don't leave that area until they go over you with a fine-tooth comb. I've had them take the saliva out of my mouth and check it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd prick my skin, wax out of my ears, tear ducts, shots. Oh, my Lord, I went through all of that before I could even come back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, this old colonel told us, says, now listen, you're going to hate us before this is all over with. Said, we cannot let you go into the United States. We don't know what you picked up over there.
Mm-hmm.
You'll
mm-hmm.
give it to the people in the United States, children and what. And yeah. I see that now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at that time, I wanted to come on over. So, gee, they ain't going to let you in here.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And they I'm telling you, I took shots, tetanus shots, and Well, what is that? It makes your arm about rot off.
Smallpox.
Yeah. Elephantitis.
Oh, encephalitis.
Every kind of a shot that you could name that hits you here and be looking down, there's one in that arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they will not let you come into the United States. A lot of people don't know that. They think, well, now you go over and you're a prisoner of war, they'll greet you right in the United States in about 3 or 4 days. No, that don't work that way.
Yeah.
Not with us, it didn't.
Yeah.
They might do it now, but I don't.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit more about when you were liberated and the people who liberated you?
General Patton's 44th Recon Troops mm-hmm. liberated us. Like I told you a while ago, we could hear the artillery moving up.
Mm-hmm.
Every day is getting closer and closer. And first thing, about 6 o'clock one morning, I seen a big American Tiger tank out there. And there was a big tire sitting there where the Germans would set up their machine gun for. And he pushed that tire down like it was a toy and just grounded that barbed wire in. And one of them pulled right up to our barracks, and I walked out there, and I said, buddy, you got a cigarette? And this guy sitting in top with that helmet on, I guess he's a leader or boss or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, and he throwed me a pack of cigarettes down there, and I lit one, and God, you talk about getting drunk. I ain't had no I smoked back then, but it was 19 years old. And after that, I said, you got anything to eat? He said, yeah, I got a can of meat and beans. And he jumped off the tank and got down there and opened it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my old nasty, dirty hands and just went down in there and ate that. And that went to the stomach and right back up. About 3 minutes up, Chuck. See, that's rich food. I can't cut that. Because
mm-hmm.
Camp Lucky Strike, they put us on a kind of a blind diet there, Donna, for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Get your stomach used to food, you
food,
know.
Food, you know, yeah.
Because that's filth as we're eating in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they died with typhoid fever, diphtheria, you name it, pneumonia. And we had one doctor there. He was a major out of our division. They put, what they did, they took all of us, and the officers went into another camp, and they took mm-hmm. from a master sergeant all down, and us was in that camp. And this doctor, he could tell you what's wrong with you. And, you know, he couldn't, mm-hmm. couldn't hear, you know.
No way to treat you.
Yeah, and yeah. God, that food that they fed us, it made, when you went to the bathroom, it was just like sawdust.
Right.
You know, and today, the VA, my rectum is all messed up and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 180 points, mm-hmm. what do you call it, disability.
Disability points.
But mm-hmm. they told me, said, I can't pay you but 80%. See, I had 40% from them laces down. I don't have no feelings much.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've had standing in foxhole with the ice and water and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the soldiers who picked you up and took you back? Did you get to be friendly with them, or?
What do you mean?
The Americans, when liberated.
Yeah, always nice to your buddies and somebody mm-hmm. that's going to help you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'd done everything they were. If you wasn't able to get up on the truck, they'd practically carry you and lay you up there.
Mm-hmm.
See, what happened in that situation with that many men, the sick goes first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had guys laying in his barracks, and we'd check on them every day. I'd go by and check on them, or some of my buddies and see if we could bring them some water or something like that. Now, they went out first. They was on stretchers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you're going to go ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kept weeding down, see. Then first thing you know, all of them's gone, and they'd haul you out in trucks. There'd just be a streamline of trucks. Mm-hmm. They had beds in these trucks, fixed up cots and stuff mm-hmm. to take the sick. And then there's a woman nurse in that truck. That mm-hmm. would give you things, you know.
All right.
Because they want to keep you alive when you got back. And
so from the camp, they took you by truck to Camp Lucky Strike.
Camp Lucky Strike, France, yeah.
Okay. And then after you had been at Camp Lucky Strike, where did you go?
They processed us, and that's when they shipped me back. And I went to Miami to recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
and they give me a 60-day recuperation furlough, and that's when I met her.
Met your wife.
And we've been married 62 years. I met her in 1947. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got discharged in 45, and we've married in 47.
Okay. Before we talk a little bit about what your life after the service, let's go back to when you're before you were captured and in the Army, because I noticed from your record you won a received a couple of awards. I think you won the Bronze Star.
Oh yeah, I've got a whole bunch of stuff here to show you.
Could you tell us a little bit about some of your decorations and?
Well, this stuff here, I guess you've seen a lot of this. That's the Presidential Citation there.
Presidential unit Citation.
Yeah. Ain't that a cheap looking medal? Give anybody. Mm-hmm. Tell it like it is. All
right.
Be nice. Well, I am. I'm trying to. And I was in the infantry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is expert infantry.
Yeah.
And this is combat infantry.
Right. Combat infantry badge.
This is World War II victory medal.
The World War II victory medal.
That's Purple Heart.
Purple Heart.
And you can't get that unless you've been in combat.
Right.
They tell me. And then see these three bronze stars?
Mm-hmm.
That's a European theater of operation.
Right.
Europe. Good conduct. This is American campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we occupied Germany, and that's my prisoner of war. See that barbed wire?
Right.
I got that in 12 years. No, it's been 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They waited a long time before they ever sent that.
Okay.
And that, you know what that stuff
is. Right. Okay. Now the,
here's some stuff you might.
Well, before we leave your medals now.
Okay.
The Purple Heart, I know, is the oldest decoration in the Army gifts.
Yeah.
That was created by George Washington. Could you tell us a little bit about what you did to receive the Bronze Star?
Oh, you mean the Purple Heart or the
Bronze Star?
You mean this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to be in combat to get that.
Right. But you have to do more than just be there.
Well, they issued it to me. I don't know. I've got documents at home.
Okay.
Yeah,
but they don't give it to you just for showing up. You have to do something.
Yeah, I've got a piece of paper that this
okay.
Bronze Star on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I wished I'd have brought that. But that I didn't know what to bring. You know, I asked somebody. I said, "What do you want me to bring?" And they said, "Well, just come on." I don't know who I talked to.
Was there a specific event that specific event that occurred that you earned the bronze?
I don't know where they give it to all of us, all of them, or just that one. I'll tell you what I'll do. I know where you're at now. The next couple of days, I'll bring it down here and show it to you, and then you can judge for yourself. How's that?
Okay. That would be okay. Good. Now, you mentioned
this. Now, the Purple Heart, I got a little shrapnel right there.
Okay, right on the edge of your hand.
If you've never been wounded or anything, they'll give you a Purple Heart for being a prisoner of war. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Okay, so
you're a casualty. You're out of the bit. It's just like you're getting killed. You're no more. You don't fight no more, so they give you a Purple Heart, I reckon.
Okay. Now, you mentioned you received a disability because of the lack of feeling in your legs.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, you know, like I told you a while ago, standing in cold water and ice water, and feet's been froze for long periods of time. And
I would imagine, you know, marching 100 and some odd miles.
Yeah, and
I
think that that, and then they give me so much for the tips of my fingers, then my rectum messed up, and my nerves. When I married her, I was climbing the walls.
Trying to get out the windows.
Thinking them Germans coming through the windows. And that went on for 5 years. This old major that doctored me, he says, Mr. Allen, you'll feel this for quite a few years, but it'll leave you. And I took medicine for 5 years. I took a pill morning, noon, and night, four pills, one after every meal, and then night before I went to bed. And I strictly believe in medicine because of that right there. Because my inside is just, you know how you are when you, and that relieves a lot of that, you know.
Time
of
stress.
But, you know, the older you get, that eventually wears off. And
Okay. Now, you were discharged in Miami, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your life after you were discharged from the Army.
Well, I come back home, and her daddy was... He worked on the Southern Railroad. He was a flagman.
Mm-hmm.
And at that particular time, they were hiring people on the railroad. And I had worked at Glen L. Martin in Baltimore, Maryland, making those airplanes. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to go back there. But when I met her, that wouldn't work, you know, me going mm-hmm. back to Baltimore and her living here.
Mm-hmm.
So her daddy took me up and introduced me to the superintendent. And they give me a job on Southern Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have been a fireman or a brakeman or any of that, work in the shops, and then the switchman. And they said, switchman, you work 8 hours and you go home. And I said, well, that's for me. I don't like that going away from home, staying all night. Now, her daddy would go to Asheville, North Carolina, stay all night and come back the next day.
Mm-hmm. So did you have a career with the railroad then after you left the...
No, I worked, I worked about 4.5 or 5 years, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And they put a new retarder system in up at Johnsville where I worked. And that eliminated all of us switchmen, practically mm-hmm. all of. And then I went to work at the Union Carbide at Oak Ridge, making atomic bombs and intercontinental ballistic missiles, stuff like that. And I worked there. That's where I retired 25 years.
Okay. Now, do you still maintain contact with any of the veterans organizations?
No. I get letters where they have a convention in Cincinnati and all of them places. But I'm the type that don't go for that. I'm funny about stuff like that. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
In Knoxville, there's a woman, I think Salvation Army or Veterans Foreign War, called me and, Mr. Allen, on Memorial Day, would you parade up on Gay Street with the old gentlemen, you know, and put your coat on, your medals and everything? My coat had come to here. I weighed 168 pounds. Can you see me walking up Gay Street up with all them medals? That's showing off. That ain't no good.
Okay. Now, before you left Miami, tell us a little bit about the hurricane that came through while you were there.
1945, yeah. That was a doozy. it was 100 miles an hour, and we put shutters on all the windows. And even the WACs, the women, nurses and all of them, we fixed their windows. And we cleaned the bathtubs out real good and drawed them plumb full of water because they didn't know how long that thing was going to last. And there was little cracks in the shutters. You could see through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd look out and you could actually, this sounds ridiculous, I could see coconuts flying through there. I never mm-hmm. seen anything like that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Sand, it was bad. You could hear that sand hitting that building and the trees falling down, electric wires popping and cracking. And
mm-hmm.
I was in a hotel with Point Siena.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I might have a picture right here. I want to show you. Those hotels in Miami then in 1945 was, oh my God, there's little bitty buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They're big lavishing things now. Best I can remember, it lasted about, I'd say, 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we went outside, and I'm telling you the truth, I never seen as much. That's me and under the palm trees.
Okay. You look like you were enjoying the weather after you got out of.
I'd gained my weight back there.
Yeah, you had gained a little bit of weight, and you were enjoying being out of Stalag 9B.
Stalag 9B.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what that Stalag stands for? Camp 9B.
Yeah. Okay. When did you move? Excuse me.
Let's see. I'm going to give you that picture back.
Sure. Yeah. When did you move to Amelia Island?
How long have we been down here, Donna?
Well, actually, you moved in August.
She's
been here 5 years.
Yeah. Okay. So you moved here to be close to your daughter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were mm-hmm. 19 miles from Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge,
mm-hmm.
and 3 miles from University of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Is there anything you would like to add to this interview?
Yeah, that's a little bit of... we went over on the Queen Elizabeth from New York Harbor.
Okay.
And come back on the SS Argentina. It's a British man. Mm-hmm. And we had British sailors that manned the ship, you know.
Right.
It was a hospital ship. And we got a big kick out of those British. We'd tell them British guys, who's got the best Navy in the world? The British Navy. We used to aggravate them poor old guys. And we'd ask them, say, when are you going to have your tea? You know, you've always heard mm-hmm. at 4 o'clock they've got to have their hot tea. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, some of them would want to fight. They'd get some. You can't blame them.
Yeah.
But that hospital, SS Argentina, that was Great Britain, one of their big thing, you know, that they right. haul people in to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But they made a carrier out of it. And boy, right. I'm telling you, that thing was packed full of soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One little thing. When we were going through France, we'd see a farmhouse over there, and when we'd stop for a break, 10-minute mm-hmm. break, there'd be a bunch of us run over at that house right quick and see if we couldn't get some cider or something, you know. And you know them people to give you some cider. Yeah, they'd give mm-hmm. you water and cider.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a piece of watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'd run back and get in ranks, you know. Sometimes yeah. they'd be moving. We'd just slide in on her.
Mm-hmm.
How did you hear the war had ended?
Gosh, let's see. Was I out then? Was I home?
I wasn't quite sure. You were there through 1945, but I wasn't sure if you were home before it ended. Or
that's what I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Alma, was I home then?
I don't know.
God, that's been so long ago. I forgot,
I don't
really.
Know so.
How were you greeted when you came home?
Huh?
When you did come home, whether it before or after the war had ended, were you well received in your community? Were people
yeah.
respectful?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Was it easy mm-hmm. to get employment for everybody when they came back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. You know what I find out here more than any place?
Mm-hmm.
I find people saluting me here. And I tell them, I say, you don't have to salute me. I've done what I had to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we were coming out of Applebee's and get in our car, and there's a real thin, he looked like an old man, about 75 or something. And he's standing in the back of my car, and I think he's looking at my license plate.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing that away. And I just saluted him back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to find that out about the island. Very respectful.
Yeah, they're real respectful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And seem like people want to say something to you, but they don't know how to approach you. See, mm-hmm. I don't. If in other words, if I'm coming in here, I don't look at you or nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if me and you got contact eyes, I can tell that you want to talk to me. And I hate to say, do you want to say something to me? You mm-hmm. know, you don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Sure, right, sure.
But
mm-hmm.
did okay. I show you these pictures?
No. Before we move to the to the pictures,
okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to the interview?
Well, let's see if there's any. Yeah, let's see.
Any friends or anybody
friends?
That you stay in touch with?
No, my close buddy, he was from up and around Cincinnati, Ohio. I don't know, he may be dead, but now
mm-hmm.
I never did get in touch. Like I say, I'm funny about, I should have went to these conventions and everything, but I never did. I don't know, when you get out of the service, you want to get home and forget that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I ought to kept up with all of them.
Just one other question, if I could, John. You're one of the very few veterans that we've interviewed that were in a concentration camp. Hollywood has made movies about this kind of a thing. How did they do? Were they way off? Were they close?
Oh, yeah. Like, I used to go to schools in Knoxville. I don't know where they'll start it down here or not. The teacher would call me and have me out. And I was in one school, and they were talking about that. Kids want to know. They think when you get shot, you stagger around like they did in the movie. I said, no. When I shot you, you'd blow you off your feet. You'd come off the ground about 2 or 3 inches and back there on your back. But that's one of the big things.
Yeah, but Hollywood didn't do it justice. No, it's fairly real.
Lord have mercy, no. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that Stalag 9, what was it, 9B or something?
17, yeah.
So Stalag 17.
William Holden.
Right. Okay.
I wished I'd have been in that camp.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you about this little boy. I don't know where he was at, Clinton, or we had about 70 students and a whole bunch of teachers, and we was in a room, something like this, and the teachers were down the sides, and I'm standing up right here, and they're all sitting here, and if you step here, you step on their hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they give me a round globe, and I show them where that I went through Europe, mm-hmm. up through there, you know, and got captured and everything, and I talk for 1 hour and tell them all everything, and then 30 minutes question and answer. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to question and answer time, this little boy right over here, boy, he shot that hand up there real quick. And I said to myself, I'm going to stay away from him. He's going to ask me something I don't want to answer. That little 12-year-old mind, just think of that now. And I got all these little boys and girls, and little girls will ask you just about as many questions, you know, as little boys. And I said, I can't do him that away to myself. And I said, okay. And he says, Mr. Allen, did you ever shoot a German? I said, yeah, but I'm not going to tell you what happened. You don't talk to kids about what you did in the war. And that might make them, they might never sleep. You know what I mean?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reflecting back on you were in the service for 2 years. Reflecting back on that, do you think that the military helped shape your life in any way? Do you feel that the prison camp experience?
It's hard to say. I've always kind of been on my own. I left home when I was 17 and went up north in Baltimore and went to work up there when I got 18. And I've been kind of on my own all my life. I'd say it helped. Mm-hmm. I'm mm-hmm. not going to say either way, but I'd say it helped. Bound mm-hmm. to help a little.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been sort of a young man, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Right.
I was much of a man, not bragging, but I was much of a man when I was 19 years old. I could run. I could run 11 miles with a pack on my back.
Mm-hmm.
See, you train for that. I was in a paratroopers
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and made 4 jumps, and I went through strenuous exercise in there.
Mm-hmm.
We used to take, when you bowl, you know those alley pins?
Right.
We used to exercise with them like that. Mm-hmm. You know what that does?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It builds up your shoulders when that.
Right. When the chute opens.
So you can stand that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been through a lot of strenuous exercise in the paratroopers and in that infantry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had a dear mother.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
You had a dear mother.
Oh, yeah. She kept every, I told them first start of the class, she kept every little thing. And there, you know who wants that stuff right there?
Hmm.
There's a professor over at the University of Tennessee. Her husband was over there getting a class or something, and he mm-hmm. was talking about me and said, wonder if Mr. Allen would give me that stuff. But I've got a grandson, and Gary says I'd give it to the
grandson
professor for mm-hmm. because he might throw it away. Or, mm-hmm. And I've mm-hmm. got telegrams in there that's 65 years old, and the paper you can tell by looking at it. I mean, boy, it's
mm-hmm.
it's it needs to be really took care of. Your son was missing in action. Your son is. As a prisoner of war, your son has been liberated and all that. Mm-hmm. Mama kept every bit of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote Mama a lot. The Red Cross give us paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show you in a minute what, you know what censoring is?
Mm-hmm.
I call them Germans the worst kind of thing, SB.
Mm-hmm.
And they took black ink and censored that. It shows
mm-hmm.
it right
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else to add, I'd certainly like to thank you for your service to the country, and it's been a real privilege to interview you.
Well, thank you for having us down here.
Okay.